I chickened out, and I blurted out the first name that came to mind.
Schwartz!
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
The military industrial complex.
We have a special guest with us in the bunker tonight. It was a strange set of circumstances. Sharon sent an email out in response to one of Carl Schwartz's regular email updates on the depleted uranium situation, and lo and behold, came to discover that Carl was in St. Louis today. Oh, should we not mention that?
I'm in Bunkerville.
Yeah. And so, as it turned out, he was free this evening, dropped by the bunker, and this is our first in-studio or in-bunker. Yeah, we can't really call this a studio, can we? Interview. Carl, welcome to town. It was awfully nice to meet you face-to-face.
Nice to be here. I'll be glad when the rain clears out and it warms up.
We did see that strange ball of fire in the sky for a little while today, which is first time in a while. I don't know if you saw out back. We've got about... we got a meadow out there. And we actually, we're rewilding the backyard is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's been too wet to get out there with the mower. So, and since the grass is taller than one of the dogs.
I've actually been here since last Tuesday night. We've been in negotiations with some doctor groups and different things on the depleted uranium. And it looks like the first one of the DU detox centers will actually be right here in St. Louis.
Well, let's talk about that. We'll talk a little bit more about your reaction to the Pentagon's release of video.
The fiction film they just released. Okay.
But we've been getting your updates on the depleted uranium story and how this is unfolding for the last couple of months. And you're doing some great work with some people who want to do something concrete, something solid to help the veterans who are being exposed to this.
Exactly.
And we're glad to see that St. Louis is one of the towns, one of the areas where we may see some people getting helped. What are you doing, and what kind of a center are they setting up here?
Well, we actually look at this as a triangle. You know, if you look at the medical profession as it exists today, that's one of the issues. Naturopathic medicines and also some technologies that regular medicine has not embraced yet are proving to be very effective for detoxification, healing up some of the neurology problems. You know, people have fibromyalgia, which is one of the leading things that you see as a side effect of this DU exposures. All these people have basically fibromyalgia. And we found a group. We got approached by them once the DU article started coming out of saying, you know, we apply four or five different things through our basically aquatic healing processes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, you know, aquatic may be a little exotic. I mean, they use a dry, far infrared sauna.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the, you know, the steam bath sauna, but they use a far infrared that has proven to be very effective in leaching this stuff literally through your skin. I mean, you literally sweat out the DU.
Mm-hmm.
They also use a foot bath with a special chemical mixture. You know, heavy metals tend to settle in the bottom of major organs. They also settle in your feet. I've actually gone through that technique three times in the last 6 days, and it's amazing how much will just come right out of your system just by doing a specialized type of heat soak using a sonic wave.
Mm-hmm.
You actually drop this thing in the water, and it is producing a kind of hydrophonic wave that just helps you to get it out. They also use several types of chelation, like Detoximin, you know, which is one of our affiliates. So we're beginning to pull together the triangle. You know, we need the doctors. We need people like neurologists, urologists, endocrinologists, people that specialize in internal medicine, urology, you know, all the different things that where this stuff settles. We've got to know what to do when that organ is affected. And what this lady and her clinic are doing, we're going to be introducing these veterans to some different types of approaches that I think is just one part of the triangle. And as far as the nanotechnology, what our company's doing, is we're developing new ways of going into the human body with a nanotechnology technique to seek out and attach and flush this out of your system.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we're working with one German company. They manufacture a type of kidney dialysis machine. If you stop and think about the type of what type of radiation or what type of heavy metal exposure are you getting, we are taking these machines and altering their properties as far as filtration to where it will trap this and take it out of your blood. And the reason for taking that approach is, you know, that way, whether you're male or female, you're not pumping all this DU back through your kidneys, your bladder, your urethra, stuff like that, to where in and of itself, as you're trying to get it out of your body, you could actually cause another type of cancer.
Mm-hmm. So the problem you got with DU is that you got it's a toxic heavy metal.
Yes.
First, and secondly, the property of the molecule itself is that it attaches to phosphate, which is basically the outer coating. Sharon would know this. She's the biologist of DNA. It
yes.
basically affects the DNA. So
it does two things to DNA. One, it will go into a cell and attach to it, which is that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing, actually, probably just as they're equal if you look at them in the bigger picture, but when these things go off, the human cell runs on like a 0.5 MeV, you know, as far as your electrical power within your cell.
Mm-hmm.
When a single depleted uranium molecule degrades, when it decays into its next stage down, where it's coming out of uranium into thorium and other things, its first signature explosion, so to speak, when it decays is 5.41 MeV, which is considerably larger than the power that drives the entire cell. Now, when that happens, attached to your DNA, it shatters the strain.
Sure. Okay.
So that particular cell is highly likely to either die or start sending out some bad signals into your system that your system is not designed to deal with, or it will form a malignant structure in your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you're fighting cancer.
Yep. So, now, is this an organization that you're setting up, or are you working with others to set up this organization to create a network of clinics?
We had actually announced in one of the email updates that as far as what my company's doing, Patmos Nanotechnologies, we were going to drive forward and put in place what our government refuses to do, and that is get the 1.3 million veterans and get the Americans that have been exposed to this around the, like, you know, one time we were talking, you know, you have the Jefferson Proving Ground, you have White mm-hmm. Sands, you've got Nevada, you've got Fort Hood, Texas, Fort Benning, Fort Sill.
There's a range in Hawaii we were reading about
yes.
not too long ago.
And right. Hawaii's fighting them big time.
I mean, right.
trying to get it shut down. You've got the one at VK Island, which is just off of Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally decided, you know, we're going to do something about trying to get this turned around and get these people the treatment they deserve. The government's going to ignore them. The more that they pay attention to this problem, the more they treat it, the more they're creating a civil and criminal, you know, negligence case against themselves. When I started advertising what our intentions were, we were going to set this up outside of Atlanta at one of the hospitals down there. We're still negotiating that, but it's been here in St. Louis. It's been the relationship between this alternative lab, the existing medical community, and what we could do as a triumvirate, you know, all three of us focused on the same problem. It's pretty exciting. I have not found anything like our clinic in Georgia.
Hmm. Now, where can people get information about this if they're interested in being kept up to date?
Well, let me see. I actually brought one of her cars tonight for that very purpose. She has set this up to where it's the St. Louis Aquatic Healing Center. And her name is Kathleen Christ. It's spelled just like Christ, but it's
okay.
pronounced Christ. And she is a registered massage therapist. She specializes in some of the waterborne therapies. And
mm-hmm.
I've seen her. I mean, she's got several people right now that are being treated for cancer. And, in fact, here's her card right here. There you go.
Okay. We'll definitely put the information on the show notes. She's got a website here that we'll link to. And people who are interested can get in touch with her regarding what's being done.
Right.
And now, where can they go to get? They can go to your website, karlschwartz.com, for your email updates.
Well, the email updates are there, and then another website's been posting them all. Has been theperfectsystem.net. It's www.theperfectsystem.net.
Okay.
That lady, Jacqueline Flanagan, has been posting just about everything because I've been traveling so much on business and taking care of some of the politics and the DU stuff. I didn't have time to stop. You know, I have just enough time to get to a hotel, send out an email update, and the next morning I write another one, and then I may travel for 3 days. That's why they come out very sporadically.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the political situation we find ourselves in as we record this on May the 18th? Yes, no, 17th, yes, May the 17th.
17th.
Yesterday was the big announcement that the Pentagon was finally going to release some video from their security cameras of Flight 77.
Yeah, what a hoot.
Yeah. We got two angles, two cameras out of the 85 around the Pentagon. And Sharon pointed out something yesterday that was very observant. The area of the Pentagon that was hit was the area that was under construction. With the workers moving in and out of the area on the outer ring that was under construction, you would assume that it would only be prudent to make sure that that area was more heavily surveilled than other areas around the outside. You want to make sure that the construction workers are where they're supposed to be and so forth.
Or they're not infiltrating the security system of the Pentagon.
Right. So the pictures that came out were ones that have been available on the internet for the last 4 years. Nothing new there.
But according to the Pentagon, it's new.
According to the Pentagon, it's new. According to Bill O'Reilly, it's new. Mm-hmm. Sadly, Judicial Watch, a group that I thought did some good work during the Clinton administration, said this ought to put the conspiracy theories to rest. One of the things that we're coming to learn, finally, is that when information is released is often more important than the information itself. Why is this information coming out now?
Well, this is an election year, for starters. You've got George Bush, last I saw, 31 and headed south on his numbers. Mm-hmm. Last number I saw on Congress, they were sitting at 26.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to imagine a group of people that are less controversial than Bush sitting at lower numbers, but that's how it is. Basically, the Democratic people are trying to maneuver for a takeover of at least the House or Senate this year. I don't know if you saw the one email update, but I've been talking a lot about Patrick Leahy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people got real excited that different states were going to start the Article 603 impeachment of Bush through the state legislatures.
Right, Illinois and California.
But the first one that actually made a move was Vermont. But what happened out of the state of Vermont was a group of Democrats that are very much under Patrick LaHaye's thumb,
mm-hmm.
went all the way around the legislature. So what was delivered to Hastert has no teeth whatsoever coming out of the legislature.
Huh.
I mean, they basically took a piece of paper down there that's not sanctioned or voted on by the legislature, which means it is not an Article 603 impeachment article.
Huh.
Now, you've got that coming out of one state where a senior senator that sits on the Judiciary Committee, he was one of the two people that got, quote, anthraxed.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that later in this show. I mean, this thing about the dirty bomb guy and what happened out of Grand Rapids.
Right.
We also have heard from two different sources that experts in handwriting have actually been able to detect that the writing on those anthrax envelopes may well be one of the agents in the Grand Rapids, Michigan FBI.
It gets better and better.
This rabbit hole goes real deep.
Okay.
And when we talk later and explain what happened with this nuclear compromise of our nuclear plants and our nuclear system, you know, maybe people understand. You know, you take some place like Denver or Grand Rapids or even Little Rock, Arkansas or Dallas, you don't do this in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep any secrets in that town.
No.
But if you want to do something like anthrax, attack 9/11, you know, attack our nuclear systems and stuff like that, you do it out of some place, you know, remote from the home office.
Okay.
But you do it under their directions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that's happened just in the last couple of days, last weekend, the Washington Post came out with an article. Nancy Pelosi, you know, which is the minority leader.
Yes.
She up and announces that even if they take over control of the House in this year's elections, they're not going to pursue impeachment.
Right.
My first question when I saw that was, I said, well, why would we want to vote for your party if all you want is the status quo?
Exactly.
Because everybody in this country and everybody in this world knows this country has its back to the wall. We have real problems in this country. And if we don't get leadership, it's going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Why vote for them?
Well, Carl, I mean the Dow is you know near a 6-year high. I mean that must mean things are good. They keep saying so on the Saturday morning finance shows.
That's absolutely true. But see the M3 money supply that they no longer report to us as of April 30th.
Right.
They're using that to artificially prop this market up.
Mm-hmm.
As you watched last Thursday, Friday, and Monday, you know our capital markets went into a meltdown mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just looking at the percentage change on that alone, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in market value that just evaporated. It's a lot of trading games, and it's a lot of artificial perception. They want Americans to think this is a great economy.
Mm-hmm.
Go try to, you know, quit your job and go try to find one today.
Well, that's true. And we had a little discussion at the office today where we were discussing home values. I mean, you sit in here in the palatial bunker, and I can tell you. Yeah.
Actually, there are no windows. It's very comfortable down here. every angle is a gunfighter's position.
That's right. Yes. Again, concrete on all sides.
Yes.
But I can tell you that it'd take twice as many pieces of green paper to buy it today as when I moved in here in 1993.
Absolutely.
And it hasn't moved any closer to any critical services. It's not moved any closer to any sources of untapped natural wealth like oil wells or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's simply that it takes twice as many pieces of green paper to buy it. Now, that says to me that the value of the bunker isn't twice as high. It's that the value of the green pieces of paper is half of what it was 12 years ago.
That's absolutely true. And you can look at the price of oil the same way. The reason oil is high is because the dollar is weak.
Right. So it doesn't take, it's not $70 a barrel oil. It's just that the piece of paper, it just takes a lot more of them. You know, where were we at? $12 a barrel a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
$12, $15 a barrel.
And, it's been averaging around 30, you know, mostly for the last 5 years. And then all of a sudden we're looking at $70 oil. That's because we have a dollar that's worth half what it was, you know, 3 years ago. I mean, the economic policies of the Bush administration have just been a complete fiasco. It's always been all about commerce, free trade, profiteering. And as the dollar gets weaker and weaker and weaker, they don't care because that keeps the door open to this globalization free trade objective of theirs. If the dollar was strong, they wouldn't be able to push this agenda.
Okay. So now the next step in the agenda is what?
In their agenda. Well, if Bush gets any weaker and it looks like the Republicans are going to lose one or both houses, I think we can expect another terrorist attack on this country. That's one thing that I think. They've been laying the groundwork for years of trying to do what you call information warfare attacks, you know, IT networks. Excuse me. I think the blackout that we had, you know, about 2.5 years ago.
Okay, right.
Up in the Northeast and into Canada was kind of a trial run. You know, can you put a worm or put some kind of a code into our nuclear grid system or electric system and shut this country down? The answer is yes, you can.
So it wasn't squirrels on the wires in Ontario?
No. No, actually, they have gone back in and analyzed that certain of those switches actually were hit with something. They're just not saying what the something is.
Hmm.
You've got Red China over here. They've got entire teams of what they call network warriors.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've learned in the last 6 months is we have network warriors too, and I'm not convinced that they're exactly up to good things. Some of it, I think, is laying the groundwork for the next event to spook Americans and keep them thinking. As Kissinger said in 91, you know, if the UN moved into L.A. to, you know, in 91, the Americans wouldn't tolerate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's enough of a foreign threat that the government says, I will protect you from, people would just trade in their freedoms, you know, to get the protection. And like Ben Franklin said a long time ago, you know, if you trade in your freedom for a little bit of protection, you don't deserve either.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the network warriors. You had an interesting experience that you related in Chapter 7 of your book.
Yes.
Which was One Way Ticket to
Crawford, Texas.
Crawford, Texas. Thank you. I was going to say Mena, Arkansas, but
what's the difference?
And it is really interesting when you piece this together, and this relates to the Grand Rapids, Michigan FBI field office. Mm-hmm. And go ahead and start. This was when you discovered that, or really it hit you that the war on terror was a sham.
It was a fiasco. I actually started looking at 9/11 differently than most people did because I knew about the Berdasco lawsuit down in Houston.
Right. We talked about that before.
You know, they went over to Fifth Circuit, and then it went up to the Supreme Court. I mean, they won at Fifth Circuit on September 9, 2003, and then they lost. Turkmenev lost at the Supreme Court in March 2004. Bush and 9/11 Commission doesn't want you to know anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
But another dynamic that had happened was back in March of 2003, three things happened in that month, and I remember them all well. The first one was we invaded Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
The second is you saw Condoleezza Rice and Dick Cheney running all over the world, you know, defending their actions because, quote, the last evidence we want of WMD is a mushroom cloud over U.S. city.
Right.
That was the month they started that rhetoric, and it is strictly rhetoric. I like what Gore Vidal said about this global war on terror. They might as well have named it the global war on dandruff. And I've been calling it something else. It's the global war on bad manners. And the problem is it's our bad manners.
Mm.
But what happened later that month on March 25th, 2003, was when they first flashed the name and the photographs up of a guy named Adnan G. Al-Shukr Juma.
Okay.
Claiming that he was a Saudi and claiming that he was the ultimate boogeyman, you know, the dirty bomb suspect. They were looking for him all over the world, and they wanted the help of the public to locate him because he was Padilla's sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the American citizen they've arrested, and they're holding him down in South Carolina, and they right. still haven't charged him.
Right. Well, they finally did. They finally did, but it was only to avoid the case in the Supreme Court.
Right, right. Now, what happened with Shukr Juma, after my divorce in 2001, I was dating a lady from Canada. Due to her health, we had brought her to the United States for what I call more proactive medical care than they do up there.
You right.
know, they run tests on you for 3 years, and then if they don't find anything, you could be dying, and you're still dying up there. But anyway, I brought her down to the United States, had her tested out with doctors I personally know. They found out what was wrong, but on March 25th, 2003, she was in my home watching TV when they flashed this guy's name and his photographs up. And as I showed you, and you pulled it up on your website, you can go to Adnan, A-D-N-A-N, and FBI, and it goes straight to his website.
Mm-hmm.
There are five photographs there. The first, the photograph in the middle on the top, you know, that's his student photograph.
Mm-hmm.
The other photograph was when he actually, you know, got a driver's license in Ontario. And then on down, the two other photographs there, mm-hmm. one of them was a secondary you know, photograph that he had taken up in Canada for his health card. Much like the illegal immigrants coming here, he qualified for medical care after he'd been there for 181 days. So, mm-hmm. you know, these are various cards that he had. But she knew this guy. She has a okay. lot of friends that know this guy. So, you know, the FBI is flashing this up there. Here's the 800 hotline. If you know where this guy is, call us. And that started a series of events that I was convinced after 90 days this GWAT's a total fraud, and here's why. When she first called the 800 line, they asked her where she was calling from. She said she was from Canada, that she knew this guy. He was in Canada where she was from. I mean, she's actually touched this guy before. She's talked to him about 10 or 15 times face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
Got to know him pretty well. And some of her girlfriends know him. He was at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario.
Okay.
When we called the FBI, they referred us to the Little Rock branch of FBI. They immediately started interrogating her as to why she was in the United States. You know, they're supposedly looking for this dirty bomb suspect, but then they started on her when they find out she's not a U.S. citizen. Now, she is a Native American. She's half Native American and half French Canadian, and she's a type of Native American called a Mi'kmaq Indian. Due to a treaty, she can live on either side of the border.
Hmm, okay.
So her interrogation from this guy was totally unwarranted and totally unfocused on the case in hand.
Right.
They're looking for this guy, not for her. Well, we finally got the guy to focus on that. He took down all the pertinent information. She went home about 10 days later, and she was coming back in August of 2003 for surgery. And they called her 3 weeks after she got home, and they threatened her not to ever disclose that she had ID'd him within 10 minutes. Now, I'm going, you know, excuse me. I mean, I got angry at them. You know, I said, what is the guy's name and number that called you? And I called him up in Washington, and I told him, and I, you know, I hate to say this on the air, but I mean, this is literally what I said to him. I said, what kind of game of shits and giggles are you guys playing with everybody? You claim you're looking for this guy. You didn't go after him. And then you call her and threaten her not to ever discuss this with anybody. Mm-hmm. Now, we didn't discuss this off the air, but this is another layer of this onion. At about the same time that that phone call was made, I got contacted by one of the reporters from Insight Magazine.
Okay.
Scott Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Scott was following up on a story up in Canada, and he got wind of this from contacts he had in Canada. This was before my book ever came out.
Mm-hmm.
He had been contacted by one of his contacts inside of our CIA, and he said, you need to go to Montreal, and you need to check into this Al-Qaeda cell, which has been in existence for over 2 years, and they're intentionally not touching it. They're not allowing anybody to touch it. So I'm sitting there going, gosh, and Scott wants to talk to my girlfriend. So, I mean, I thought about it very carefully.
Sure.
I let them talk by phone. She didn't want to see him face to face. You know, she felt like she was being watched because, I mean, she lives like a mile from McMaster University. And then about 6 months ago, I get approached by a guy I'd never heard from before in my life. He had just seen one of the email updates I'd sent out where I made a reference to this.
Mm-hmm.
So then he tracks down my book, buys it, flips straight to chapter 7, reads about this, calls me up in a panic. He said, let me tell you what I know about this. He said, I do nuclear research. He said, I'm not a PhD. I'm just one of those guys that's gifted in what you call alternative energy physics.
Now, we should mention McMaster University has a reactor on campus.
They have a reactor on campus for teaching purposes.
Right.
Excuse me. And this dirty bomb suspect is supposedly there.
Mm-hmm.
In May of 2001, before 9/11 even happened, our entire nuclear power grid was compromised by a hack attack. They came through a computer at McMaster University, the same university he's at.
Now, it didn't come from that computer. It went through the computer network?
It went through the computer network.
All right.
And it happens to be the same group of computers that is around that reactor.
Okay.
You know, part of their teaching, part of the university up there. And they hit this guy's computer.
Okay, and this fellow's in Grand Rapids, Michigan?
He's outside of there. He's at Baldwin, Michigan.
Okay.
Just outside of Grand Rapids. But the reason he contacted me, he goes, I need to send you a copy of what's called the Baldwin Memo. I'm from Baldwin, Michigan. But you need to see what I sent to the Pentagon. And when I sent it to the Pentagon, they went into a panic attack. I said, went into a panic attack? Why? And he said, I don't know why. I said, maybe we can find out over time. I said, well, send it to me. And what he's laying out in this memorandum is about the attack that came through McMaster, verified by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, verified by the CSIS, which is their version of this, you know, Homeland Security and CIA combined.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that attack did not come from McMaster. It came through McMaster, and apparently the originating source was the Grand Rapids, Michigan FBI office, which is 25 miles from him.
Very interesting. Now, was the attack designed to make it look as though it had come from McMaster?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, same time that this dirty bomb suspect is up there.
Okay.
So I started challenging DHS and FBI, you know, saying, gentlemen and ladies, whoever I was talking to of that persuasion, I said, you need to fully explain what you guys are really doing here. I mean, they have posted this guy's name 5 times that I've seen on TV and his photograph. In one interview with James Comey, who's the former Southern District of New York Attorney General, U.S. Attorney, they moved him to Virginia. He got pinned down in a press conference where they asked him point blank why they're looking for him. And the guy kept grilling him. Finally, he admitted they don't have enough to even arrest this guy or convict him. I said, well, why are you representing, though, that he's a Saudi when he's not?
Mm-hmm.
And why are you going full overboard to push this guy's name out here? And you didn't even bother to go after him when you knew exactly where to find him.
Yeah, should be considered armed and dangerous.
Yeah. And then the other thing up there, the aliases,
right,
that you're sitting there looking at on his website. She told them the name that he was using up there.
Mm-hmm.
And that alias that he was using at that school is not on that list.
Hmm.
Now, this year, you know, here we are in May. In January, they called her this year.
January 2006.
2006.
Okay.
And they said he was never there. It was a mistaken identity. Don't worry about it anymore. They hadn't called her since 2003.
So out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
After 2.5 years, they called her up and said, forget all about the guy.
Yeah, just forget you ever knew it. And a mistaken identity, he was never there. And she called me and told me, you know, what happened. I said, was it the same people? She said, no, it was a different person. They actually called out of another part of, you know, they called from New York. And I said, isn't that interesting? I said, because in the interim time, you know, right after my book came out and people started looking at this story much, much closer about who he is and whether or not they did or did not go after him, he's been seen twice in the United States traveling our freeways. Once by my girlfriend and me. He's on an FBI wanted list, and he just walks across the border.
How did he get in from Canada?
Exactly. And he was also seen up in New Hampshire driving a silver, this was the description, silver SUV with Massachusetts tags. Now, how many Arabs, you know, driving silver SUVs with, you know, Massachusetts tags could there possibly be? They can't seem to find this guy. I don't think they're looking for him. I think this is just another name they've dropped out there for when it happens, they have somebody to point at.
Just like after 9/11, it turned up that some of the fellows who were some of the 19 guys
nine of the 19 were
still alive.
Oh yeah,
and kicking elsewhere in the world. So we've got this fellow who was studying nuclear medicine at McMaster University.
That's what we've heard he was studying. I mean, he may have been in their chemistry department from, you know, he was in and around and close to that whole thing, but they're not missing any materials. You know, I've talked to people at McMaster. They're not, and they have very strict protocols. If they were missing so much as a gram of anything in that reactor, their own government would shut it down.
Yeah. Unlike, where was it? There was a story that was out just a few months ago from, was it White, not White Sands, but the test laboratory down
Sandia.
There in New Mexico, Sandia, which is missing a whole bunch of plutonium.
They're missing enough to take a state off the map.
Yeah. And they're trying to claim it was just a mathematical error, just
an accounting
mistake. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So we've got this young man who is apparently had his life turned upside down because he is now a person of interest on an FBI watch list.
Mm-hmm.
And although your former girlfriend, lady friend, identified him and told the FBI
positive
where they could find him.
Two of those photographs, she directly had something to do with those photographs. I mean, she is very familiar with those two photographs because she was involved in them.
So a positive identification and gave them his location, and yet he still apparently is at large.
Yeah, and it went a little deeper after that. As soon as my first story on this broke, it was called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Truth. I mentioned this. I got contacted by the Saudi embassy, and they said, we have something to share with you if you would talk to us. You know, most Americans are very wary about us and blah, blah, blah. They gave me the full rundown on this guy. His grandparents are from Yemen.
Okay.
They moved probably now close to 60 years ago from Yemen to Guyana, South Africa, which is right next to Venezuela.
Or South America.
South America, I mean. South America. And his father was involved in the oil industry.
Okay.
In Venezuela. Okay. Now, he worked for 26 years for a Venezuelan subcontracting company in Brazil. And it was actually a company that was co-owned by Venezuelan Brazilian interest. For 26 years, he worked in Saudi Arabia on improving and upgrading their total output. He's never been a Saudi citizen. The wife, the mother of this alleged dirty bomb guy, is from Trinidad and Tobago. And his father is originally, you know, a descendant of Yemeni parents. This guy was born, in 87. He was born in...
Well, it says 75 here.
Yeah, he was born in 75. And he moved to the United States. His family, you know, mother, father, him, and another brother, and I think there's one sister. They moved to the United States in 1987. They've been living in Florida since then without incident. And then all of a sudden, this guy's in Canada going to school, and all of a sudden his name's dropped as the ultimate threat to America. You know, very consistent with this whole propaganda game that was being played in March of 2003. I mean, from everything I've heard about this guy and everything I heard from the Saudis, and that, I mean, I was getting stuff right out of their intelligence group, mm-hmm. you know, who this guy is, and they tracked this family. The family was no threat to the Saudis. He's no threat to us. He's never been associated with any fundamentalist Islamic group. And even when James Comey, when he got pinned in that one press conference, said, we don't have enough on him to arrest him or convict him. You know, the first question is, why in the hell are you looking for him then?
Why is he still on the watch list and considered armed and dangerous?
Yeah.
It does make you wonder, well, with the president's approval rating where it is right now, and with the types of stories and information that have been coming from Washington, D.C., when you piece that information together with what you experienced here with this young man who is wanted but not being searched for, what do you see as the next event here in this grand game?
I actually see some unlucky U.S. city being subjected to a dirty bomb attack. It wouldn't have to be major. I mean, you could take something as simple as, not depleted uranium, but hot stuff, you know, like plutonium, U-236, and neptunium. And you could take 1 pound of that and blow it up over Chicago, and you're going to wind up killing 700,000 people in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it would be something like that. And I think they've already laid the groundwork. I mean, I was absolutely, totally unconvinced after everything that the Homeland Security and FBI had to say to me, other than stonewalling me. They kept telling me, oh, this is classified. And I said, well, the initial report was made on my home telephone in my presence. You know, I was on the call. What do you think you're classifying from me? You know, other than the fact that this is a bogus lead. This guy is not a suspect. And they never could explain it. They just kept trying to deflect it. But when they call her and threaten her, and then they turn around and call and say mistaken identity, I did find out from some of his friends and family in Florida. Yes, he was in Hamilton, Ontario at McMaster. So they can call and they can give all the assurances to her they want that he wasn't there. But I happen to know, and so does his family, that he was.
Well, the other thing that's in the news right now, to change gears just a little bit, because I'm curious to see what you think, the story of the NSA spying. This has suddenly become an issue. And one of the things that I think most of us weren't aware of, I wasn't aware of this, and have learned over recent weeks, that the NSA has been involved in tracking communications of American citizens for years.
They have.
In fact, the whole FISA legislation that was passed in 1978 was due to the fact that the NSA was reading all Western Union telegrams sent to and from American citizens going overseas, going all the way back to the 1940s.
Exactly. Telegrams, they listen in on all international calls.
Right. And
they're basically looking. Well, they don't listen in as far as a human. They use machines to look for keywords.
Right.
And for certain keywords involving finances, terrorism, guns, money, this, that, and the other, they zero right in on that.
And it's been a cooperative effort with British intelligence. Mm-hmm. In fact, they have an officer stationed here that actually types in the names that are supposed to be tracked, so that there's plausible deniability for the NSA.
Right.
And we return the favor over there at their listening station in the UK for British citizens, so that it's an American who actually types in the names in the
exactly.
So it's been going on for a long time. So then the question is, why then is it becoming an issue now? Are we seeing a turf war going on inside the intelligence community? Is the intelligence community trying to
derail
the administration, or are we just seeing Democrats trying to position themselves to take back the House and the Senate?
Well, it's that, but there's some other things too. I mean, in the past, the NSA was not viewed as an enemy of the American people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you weigh in the Patriot Act, when you weigh in what happened on 9/11, the stonewalling of every investigation, the total botching, that's what I've been calling this. I mean, they totally botched. You know, they're supposedly looking for this Adnan G.L. Shukrajuma, found out where he was, didn't go after him.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me they weren't looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, God, if I had been president and they found this guy, you know, the Delta Force would have surrounded him within 1 hour.
Sure.
And 3 months later, this was funny, when we went back up there to bring her back to the United States for surgery, I went over by that university, and I was waiting for her to run in and grab something from this store and come back out. They were still there looking for him. And I got out. You know, I was driving a car with U.S. plates on it, and I got out, and I walked up and handed the guy my driver's license. And I said, I don't think you're going to find him here. He's long gone. And he said, what do you know about it? And I said, we were the ones that made the call. You know, bang. I mean, they were literally still there.
That's it is astounding.
Taxpayer money at work.
Yeah. Well, again, we're seeing it in the news, and it's really an issue now in the Talking Heads programs as to whether or not this NSA monitoring is an issue.
Well, the last poll I saw, two out of every three Americans thought it was okay.
Yeah, that
they don't. They don't seem to understand what's at stake here.
Well, that's assuming that the poll numbers are accurate and not just another PSYOP attempt to make us think that it's okay. Or make us think that everyone else around us thinks that it's okay.
I don't think it's okay.
I think it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, and it ought to stop and stop right now. But, again, it is something that has been going on and has been going on for 40 years. And
that's true.
Again, we come back around to the information that's been released is maybe not as important as the timing of the information's release.
I think it's more timing. I mean, right now we're in an election year. You got the Democrats trying to get the House or Senate back. You got the Republican Party in meltdown mode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I used to think the Democrats were stupid. I mean, what I'm looking at right now is the White House and even the leadership in the House and Senate. It's like they can't come up with a game plan that doesn't backfire in their face. Everything they try keeps backfiring. Mm-hmm. I mean, even all this talk about Iran, you know, you got a president up here talking about, we got to do something about the energy prices. Well, hell, it's his mouth and the belligerence of our government that's driving up the energy prices. You call an oil trader, you know, what's driving this up? All this crap going on with Iran.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, it's doublespeak to me. I mean, I watch them, you know, it's a matter of making policy and then intentionally, you know, kind of cloaking what their end objective is. And we're just supposed to buy off on whatever Bill O'Reilly says.
And why are the Democrats, why would Pelosi and Harry Reid not try to make the Fourth Amendment of the Bill of Rights an issue?
George Bush has the ultimate defense. If they try to impeach him, all he's got to do is out everyone on the other side of the aisle that's just as guilty as he is of misprision of treason and outright treason against this country. I mean, it would totally expose them trying to go after him would totally expose that the wealthy elite, big oil, big banks, big defense, big pharma own both sides of the aisle. It has nothing to do with, we don't have a two-party system. We have a one-party system that is owned way above them on what you call left and right camps. Mm-hmm. And the only difference the change in leadership does in the White House is, the people like Bernard Schwartz, Loral, big friends with Clinton, Peter Buttenweiser, you know, the guy that's been working on the NEA for years because he publishes the books. Those folks would get to do the first plundering.
Hmm.
You know, they've been kind of pushed aside by the Bush administration. They've been neglected for the last five and a half years. So basically all it is just a name change, and the other people have first dibs at the trough.
In other words, it's just a political version of the World Wrestling Federation.
Exactly. Well, and unfortunately, we have many Americans that think that's real, too.
Well, Carl, it's been a pleasure getting a chance to sit down and across the table and meet you face-to-face. And,
well, same here. You know, guys, I hear I'm the first guy in the bunker, so I feel honored.
Well, you found the secret. Now we have to kill you. So.
Okay.
And we'll get the dogs on that right. Just as soon as they wake up.
I'll tell you what, if I have to put up much more of what's coming out of D.C., that would be a relief.
Well, Carl, we keep in our prayers, and we wish you the best. And we just are humbled that you took the time out to stop by and visit us today. And
it was my pleasure. It was only 15 minutes to get here, so that wasn't too bad for St. Louis.
Well, no, that's one of the things we like about St. Louis. It's just about 15 minutes to get most everywhere in this town, which
exactly.
Is a nice thing about living here.
I'm not going to get a chance to see the Cardinals in town, though. My mother and I love to watch the Cardinals, but
Well, you know, this would be a great time to see him. I got to say, I grew up on the north side of Chicago, so I live and die with the Cubs. And they had their June swoon and got it out of the way a month early this year. But I'll tell you what, getting a chance to see Albert Pujols play right now, you may be able to say someday, and I may be able to tell my grandkids someday, that I saw the best player of all time. And he's a good man, and he's a clean player, and it's a real honor to watch him play. So
I agree.
Yeah. So you get a chance to come back, and we'll definitely take in a Cardinals game, especially now they got that new stadium there. It's a little harder to get tickets, but we'll find a way.
Well, I'd like to try that.
Yeah. Well, Carl, thank you for stopping by today, and we appreciate you
taking
the time to come by here.
My pleasure. Gonna step up to the microphone.